Like notes through the hourglass.
Like these notes through
the hourglass.
Song.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Songs of Our Lives. I'm Brad Rose. I'm an artist, a composer, a writer, the founder of Foxy Digitalis, and someone who thinks about music and sound far more than is healthy. Each week, I invite on a guest to talk about the songs and the music that has meant a lot to them and left its mark. Previous guests include Marissa Nadler, Ethan Miller, Glenn Donaldson, Charmaine Lee, and so many more. But this week, I am very excited to have Gabriel Birnbaum of the band Wildermaker on. That's kind of a mouthful. I've known Gabriel for a while and been a fan of Wildermaker for a while, but the thing that kind of really prompted me to want to do this is they've got a new record coming out on September 19th on Western Vinyl. It's called The Streets Like Beds Still Warm. Great title. And it's the first record in a trilogy of albums that basically it follows the sort of protagonist of this story, this narrative, whatever, basically from dusk till dawn, like in one night. And it's, I am a sucker for things like that, but the way that kind of the choices that they made, like putting this record together and the sort of sonic world that it inhabits and the way it tells that narrative in musical form, at least across the first record. I haven't heard the other two, obviously. It is my kind of thing. I've been listening to it a lot, really enjoying it. And so I was like, hey, I got to talk to Gabriel about this, learn more about it. And yeah, it tied in really well. So we had a great time recording this episode, and I really hope you check out the record. Like I said, it's out September 19th, but you can pre-order it now. Link in the show notes. And hey, hope you enjoy the episode. My guest today is a musician, a songwriter, singer, a therapist, a whole lot of other things. A therapist, though not my therapist, but hey, that's all right. shout out to my therapist. Anyway, it's Gabe Birnbaum. Welcome to the show. Woo!
Thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here.
So, how's it going? It's Monday going right. As we record this, trying to get started into the week here.
Yes, trying to exist and complete all of my jobs so that no one is angry at me.
Good luck. God, that's feels like an impossible task sometimes.
Sometimes it is an impossible task, and you know what? That's okay. Sometimes people just have to be a little bit angry at you.
Yeah, that is the truth. Anyway, we're here. You got a new record. Your band has a new record. So Wildermaker called The Streets Like Beds Still Warm, which is such a good title, by the way.
Thank you.
It's out September 19th on Western Vinyl. What is, I guess I don't know where to start. I was going to just ask about the title, but first, I guess the best place to start is, so you've got this like trilogy.
Yes.
Happening. So like one night from dusk to dawn across three albums.
Yes.
Which correct. This kind of thing is so in my, I'm like, yes, this is the kind of weird shit that I'm all about. What made you want to tell this story basically?
What made me want to tell this story? I have been feeling a bit constrained by the sort of indie rock songwriter style that I've been working in. I think it's, I do have a deep love for songwriting. You know, I went through intensely loving periods with like Fleetwood Mac and classic 70s pop music. And I wanted to make music that sounded like that, but I also wanted to make much stranger music. Mm-hmm. And I think I got positive feedback professionally the more pop oriented things got, but I had a really hard time staying in that zone. and it doesn't represent all of me,
right?
Creatively. So what happened with this record is I've been working. So I work in the music industry as well. Being a therapist, I'm a music publicist. I know that everyone hates music publicists, but I'm not ashamed. I mostly work with experimental artists. I spent some time working for International Anthem Recording Company. And one thing that I loved about working with them is that so many of their records were made in this beautiful way where the artists would improvise together and then things would be kind of like retroactively carved into a shape that would make a beautiful record. Sometimes improvise over again, you know, but it was an interesting way of working, and it's completely different from how I've always worked. I've always written the songs. I bring them to the Wilder Maker, to the band. We arrange them. We record them mostly live in a room, and then we do some overdubbing. So I had this idea of a different process in mind. And then this time my band also is on tour all the time with other people. So everything kind of came to a head, and we basically had 2 days in which we could all be in the studio together. And they were very soon from when I made the inquiry the band. So I was like, okay, it's time for this idea. This is the moment. So we improvised in the studio together for like 2.5 days. And it was astonishing how much material came out of it. I wound up, even after I edited it severely down, I wound up with 2 hours of music that I really loved.
Wow.
And I sent it to Western Vinyl, who signed us off of Male Models, the last record, which is a very pop-oriented record. Very tight songcraft oriented music. And Brian was, to his credit, in spite of his immediate disappointment that it sounded nothing like the band, spent some time with it and got really into it, and he got really excited about it and has been incredibly supportive. So he agreed to put out the whole shebang.
Man.
Yeah. And anyway, so you asked me what made me want to tell this sort of story, this dust to dawn thing. And I think the process that we used with the improvisation really inspired me to go. I had to go outside, way outside what I was comfortable with process wise. I was doing a lot of editing of audio in Logic, like editing of live sessions with a million microphones, just not my strong suit, not my experience place. And like condensing improvisations. I don't know. I was out of my comfort zone the whole time, which was very painful, but also great. And I think training to be a therapist is so helpful for that, because your job is to be uncomfortable, like as much as possible, and to be really tuned into that discomfort.
Yeah.
So it made me want to think about things that I don't address during songwriting, because maybe they're too uncomfortable or they're too difficult. So there's a lot of like family, illness, death, mental illness, but in like a different way from usual. I don't know, like dark impulses. Mm-hmm. I have the whole thing is a very film noir kind of coded story to me, in which the protagonist, something I think we all deal with all the time, right? We're in this world where horrible things are happening constantly, which we're always aware of. And we're trying to be good people in this really messed up world. Mm-hmm. And the world is corrupting us, because you can't be distraught all the time. You can't function.
Yeah.
So you wind up ignoring, you know, child murder and genocide because you don't know what else to do. Sorry, this is heavy stuff. So it's like, how do you exist in this corrupt world and not become corrupted by it? Which is usually what happens to the film noir protagonists, you know?
Right. Man. Yeah. No, I mean, that's like hearing you explain this, I'm like, oh, no wonder I'm like, so, cause I've really enjoyed like the Wilder Maker stuff for a while, but this one kind of, it's very different, and I connected with it in an unexpected way, really. Like it came through my inbox, I was like, oh, cool. Next. And then read the thing and listened to it. I was like, wait, what? But hearing a lot of what you're saying, I mean, that's like something I've been thinking about so much this year I began this year, like someone I'm working with through sort of mentorship coaching thing. The very first thing I talked to them about was like my mantra for this year. The thing I've been telling myself is like, being uncomfortable is okay. Mm. Being uncomfortable is okay. Because like in my creative practice and so much of my world this year, especially, I've been uncomfortable. I've felt unmoored and I'm not used to working that way creatively.
Yeah.
And so finally, like, being okay with it then, like, sort of, it was like this, then the floodgates opened. It was like, oh my God. Like,
yeah,
now I know what I'm doing. I want to do. And it's, you know, I won't get into all that, but, yeah, that's really, it's amazing how, like, what we can find when we just put ourselves in these, like, places or spaces or headspaces, whatever, that are not comfortable.
Yeah. And it's funny. I feel like we have a knee jerk reaction to feeling uncomfortable, which is it's bad, and we need to stop it as soon as possible.
Yeah.
Same with feeling sad, same with feeling angry, anything like that. But it's interesting to change your perspective a little bit and be like, okay, just be curious about it.
Right.
And then, I mean, this is where the therapy and the music practice, like, overlap inevitably, because I'm like, oh, this process is so hard, and I don't know what the hell I'm doing. And then I'm like, okay, well, that's interesting. What can I, you know,
right.
Instead of just fleeing it and trying to go back to what I'm used to, I can just be like, yeah, this is super uncomfortable. Okay. Now what?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's, there's something like when you can really kind of embrace that or be in that, it's so freeing to be like, oh, I can do it. I can do anything.
Yeah. I can. No rules, no parents.
Yeah. And you, then you also realize it's so cool that, like, the label you guys have has been is supportive, because in the one hand, and this is, I've talked about, like, in the grand scheme of things, nobody cares really. Like, you, like, we care. I care way more about what my, you know, but you get in this headspace of like, oh, well, God, if, you know, if we put out a record that's so weird, like, are people gonna, like, flee or, like, ignore it? It's like,
yeah,
nobody's, people, you know, I mean, it's like, it's terrible to say, but it's like, nobody really cares, but it's also freeing and wonderful.
Totally. It is extremely freeing. I think also I spent so much effort on previous records, on Male Models in particular, like, trying to sand off the weird edges of my music so that it would be more palatable.
Yeah.
And I think that was a mistake. I mean, I stand behind those songs. I love those songs. Those songs are very weird, but I recorded them and set them up in a way where you don't really notice. And this record, I tried to do the opposite. I tried to lean into as making things as weird as possible. I also, my listening recently has just been not in any way aligned with indie rock. It's been like Iko Ichibashi. I listen to Scree a lot. I listen to Horan and Barchi. It's just like, Bitch and Boz. It's like long form instrumental trancy music that is kind of outside and mysterious.
Yeah.
And I wanted to make music that aligned with that while still having lyrics.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. So are all three of the records, like, from these 2 days in the studio, or is that just?
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. So
yeah,
it's all basically recorded, or the bones.
The bones are all recorded. The second record is pretty much done. The third record is still in progress.
Nice.
Yeah. It's been a large and confusing endeavor, but it's also, I love, everyone who knows me rolled my eyes when I told them I made a triple record. This is exactly what I do. I make everything as large as possible.
Hey, I was having a whole lot of conversations this weekend after watching this performance film, anyway, but about sort of the nature of spectacle in experimental music and performance and how we need more of it. Like,
yeah, it's fun.
Yeah.
It's engaging.
It is. Like, you know, it's fine to go. I go to plenty of shows where it's just somebody up on stage turning some knobs and it sounds great, but it's like, give me something weird. I don't know. Put up, like, even just put on a fucking robe and have some, like, hold up some neon colored flag. I don't know. Like, I'm just pulling shit out of my ass here, but,
Try it.
Let's,
we're at, yeah.
The this world's is, falling apart. Get weird. Try weird shit.
Yeah. I think there's a, this idea of cringe keeps coming up recently in my life as a theme. I have a lot of clients who are afraid of being cringe and, they restrict themselves, constrict themselves because of that. And I do it, certainly. And people talk about how liberating it is when you don't do that. But it's very hard to approach. But I feel like the same, even in the experimental music world, same thing applies. Like,
Yeah,
I don't know. I remember going to see Sunburn, Hand of the Man, and they're like marching in a procession with a skeleton around this church. It's like, it's crazy. And it's right. It's ridiculous, but it's great. It feels like a ritual when you're there. It's way more fun than people, you know, being afraid to do something embarrassing, which is quite boring.
Yes. Oh, 100%. So the first album ends at 1:15 a.m.
Yeah.
So where does the narrator go from here?
It's a bit abstract, but nowhere good.
Okay.
He continues drinking and dissolving himself, and then has a kind of, it's hard to describe. He has a kind of like drinking from the river of the dead and forgetting who he is experience towards the end of the second record, and then a kind of rebirth experience in the third record.
Oh man. I can't wait to hear all this stuff.
Yeah. That music only gets weirder.
Sign me up. All right. Well, I could go down this rabbit hole for much longer than this podcast needs to be.
Sure. Same.
So I'm going to awkwardly segue now into the talk about all these songs.
So as always, for, baby. Yeah.
So far, I don't really edit these, but
good to know.
Yeah. I mean, I can if I need to, but you know, who's got time? So we're going to start, as always, with what is the first song that you remember?
Yep. So the first song that I remember is Paul Simon's Graceland. It's really the whole record, but I'll pick the title track.
Sure.
I was obsessed with this record as a 5-year-old.
And oh, wow.
I would yell over and over for my parents to put it on. And that's apparently awesome. I would call it Graceland. My mom loves to tell me.
Oh, man.
Yeah, but I was just instantly in love with this record. And it totally tracks with my entire musical life. You know, I spent whatever 12 years touring in a band that plays African music, plays Ethiopian music on saxophone. The whole Zion record, Bobby Mickey record, was about trying to bring together African influences from and world music influences that I learned about playing in that band with songwriting. This record is intensely resonant for me, and it still honestly holds up.
Oh man, yeah, it still goes. I love this record and this song. Like, it's, I don't know, I always feel like there's like all these contradictions in this song that I love. Like, this sort of like, it's like a pilgrimage, but it's also like about being lost and at the same time and like seeking grace, but you don't really know where the hell you're going or where you are. And I mean it's Paul Simon, of course. He like threads that needle perfectly. Yeah, I mean,
one of the best songwriters of all time. Yeah. And I know he's like a legendary schmuck, however, right. And that ties in deeply to this record, which is problematic in a lot of ways.
Sure.
However, I would argue that part of what makes his quest for redemption, which is, you know, threaded throughout all of his music, so compelling, is the fact that he's not the nicest person.
Right.
According to legend, at least. I have no personal interactions with Paul Simon.
Yeah, I think it seems like it's well documented at this point, but yes.
I don't think I'm saying anything controversial.
Right, yeah. People are going to be like, what?
Their worlds will be shattered. But I think it's part of what makes the... Yeah, like this quest for redemption is so compelling, is that it's so hard to be redeemed as a person who's constantly doing. I mean, you know, not all of us are misbehaving in the same way, but we all struggle.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that sort of messiness is, I mean, it's, I don't know. Yeah, if it was all like tied up in a neat little bow, it would be a lot less compelling, and we wouldn't.
Yeah, the messiness is wonderful.
Yeah,
but I think we have a hard time embodying that now. Well, it's just a different, it's a different world.
It's a very different world.
And I don't want to be mean to people.
Right.
Allegedly.
What is a song that either makes you cry or it makes you like feel some kind of way?
Yeah. So Bill Callahan's cover of Kath Bloom's song, The Breeze, My Baby Cries, which was on this compilation where all these people cover Kath Bloom. Had you heard this before?
Yeah, it's that compilation and that whole thing is... I mean, Kath Bloom is... I know we're going to talk about Bill's version because it's incredible, Like Cat Bloom is, I feel like one of the most underappreciated songwriters in the last 50 years or something. She's so incredible.
Yeah. I think the reason the song destroys me is the writing. The writing is just unbelievably good. And it does this thing that songs can do at their best, which is that it adds up to so much more than what it seems like. Mm-hmm. Like the lyrics seem straightforward in some ways, but they're just like, man, it's like every other line just oh,
I know, just keeps like turning the knife deeper
and deeper. My god It's so hard to tell where I end and my father begins, like,
right.
Oh my god, like people like us, we can never win, like, man, I just, yeah. And that, just the, you know, there's this thing, the porcupines, I forget, I think it's a Schopenhauer thing, but it's like they want closeness, so they move together, but then their quills prick each other and they have to move apart, but then they want closeness and they move together, and then on and on forever. And this is people. And that is what this song is about, you know, just like not knowing, like wanting so badly to love someone the right way and not be able to do it.
Oh man.
And
Yeah, no, that's like so well put. And I think, and like the thing, like Callahan's version gets me, like there's, I feel like he finds that and this is sort of his, I feel like his superpower, like that sort of exact pressure point between like that tenderness and closeness, but also distance. Mm-hmm. And like, and the way, and then you take that, which is what the song feels like it's about, and then you put it, and it's just like, Jesus Christ.
Like, yeah.
I wonder if he picked this, or if this was like someone was like, "Hey, Bill, you should cover this."
I'm curious.
It's such a perfect match. Yeah.
Yeah. His delivery on this is incredible. And yeah, I have many vivid memories of crying to this song.
Yeah.
I have to admit.
I hadn't heard it in a bit, and I put it on, like, I guess it's over the weekend. And I was just like, okay, keep it together. Keep it together.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And that whole compilation is fantastic. If people haven't heard it, they should check it out.
And they should check out Cath Bloom, just brilliant songwriter.
Yeah. Well, on the other side, what's a song that'll put you in a better mood?
I chose Dougie Poole's "Vaping on the Job," which has been a household classic since its release in my home.
I love this song so much. Man,
such a banger! Such a banger.
I always feel like this song is, it's like there is an alternate timeline out there where this was like the biggest country radio hit in 1985 or something.
Yeah. Dude, this song deserves to be a hit. The chorus is so good. All the guitar riffs are so sick. The production's amazing. And the lyrics are fantastic. Nothing makes me feel better than like bitching with someone about some shit that sucks.
Right.
And this song is like hanging out, bitching with someone in a very fun way about some bullshit that you have to deal with.
I know. God, it's so good. Yeah, I don't know. And it's the production of it kills me because it somehow like hits all those like sort of classic country notes, but it's then just being totally fucking out there. And
the fucking robot voice and before the choruses is so funny.
I know.
This is a huge argument for funniness, like humor in music, which I think is extremely underrated.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. There was, so I do remix episodes of this show where I have people on a second time and have a whole second set of questions. Ooh. And one of them is like, what is the funniest song?
Yeah.
And people struggle with that one. Cause that like, I totally agree that like, if you can get funny and silly without being, I don't know. I mean, even be corny. I don't know. I just think it's like, it's a hard thing to do well.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk about Ryan Davis later in this episode, but Ryan Davis is someone who, his humor only makes the sad shit more devastating. Like the humor just enhances everything. Makes the whole thing feel more human. And I think, you know, Tobacco City, who I did not select for this, but who I listened to a ton, also created doing that. Like talking about huffing gas out of a paper bag behind the grocery store. Like it's funny. It's so bleak. It's funny. And then the chorus about leaving this from the sun autumn is so much more powerful because of the hilariously crappy nature of huffing gas behind a grocery store.
Just saying that makes me laugh. Like, this was, whenever I had Wendy Eisenberg on, they were, talking the what's the funniest song is kind of the Wendy Eisenberg question, because they were like, I love songs that are funny.
Yeah. Which, wait, what did they choose?
Well, I haven't had them on for the remix We just kind of got, I don't remember what we were talking about, but you know, and it felt like it tries, like, yeah, because Wendy's music often has, I feel like, a humor to it in a really clever way. So
yeah, I have so many good memories of driving on the highway listening to Vaping on the Job. Also, it's such a great driving song.
It is. Oh man,
just not something I get to do as much as I like living in New York City, but
right,
man, it really hits on the highway.
yeah everybody listening, if you get on the highway next time, throw this record on, especially this song.
Yeah, but the whole record is honestly just amazing.
All right, everybody's favorite question. I know you loved this question. What is objectively the best song of all time?
Yeah. Son of a bitch. I'm gonna go with my first thought, which was Bonnie Raitt, I Can't Make You Love Me.
Yeah. Dude.
I just don't think that you can do anything better than this. You could do something, maybe someone could do something as good, but it's hard for me to think of anything that's not perfect about this song and the delivery and everything.
Yeah. No, this, I was thinking about, because, you know, like the sort of sub question I put on the questionnaire for this is like, if you had to show an alien like the height of sonic achievement, but I was thinking with this song, it's like, if you were trying to explain human vulnerability to an alien civilization,
yeah, just I chose more song. Like human feelings.
Yeah. I mean, it is, and not to get like all therapy speak here, but to me, this is like the musical equivalent of watching someone finally set down something they've been carrying for way too long.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
I think, yeah, I mean, it's so, what is the right word? I can't think of the word I want, but there's something so like self, the narrator is just like debasing themselves, kind of like,
yeah,
as ritualistically to like end this. I don't know. It's so fucking sad. Like,
I know.
like I'll feel the power and you won't. It's just like, and obviously Bonnie Raitt's delivery just
incredible. Oh man. She's like, yeah, it's like she's not even like performing the song. She just like inhabits the song or something. It's so truly unreal.
Yeah. It's, man.
Yeah.
I
no one's ever picked this for this question, but I love this.
Hell yeah. Okay, good. Yeah. I was nervous I was going to repeat some things, because I did have the impulse to pick the Edward Sharpe song for the worst song of all, or the most hated song. But then I thought someone like just picked it, so I was like, okay, I can't.
No, that's a great pick. All right, well, okay, kind of on the other side of this, a song you used to love, thought it was amazing, now you think about it, you heard it recently and not so much, didn't do it for you.
Yeah, I kind of had a hard time with this question. I thought it would be easy because there's a lot of music I listen to a ton that I don't listen to anymore, but going back to that music, I don't necessarily feel like it's not, I still kind of feel moved by it, but I picked the Death Cab for Cutie song, the first song off Transatlantis in the new year. I don't think it's a bad song of now or anything like that. And I don't really look down at it, but it's a kind of expression that I don't really relate to that much anymore. It's very dramatic. I don't know, it's kind of self-involved in like a teenage way, which is not bad. Like, people love that shit and it does fulfill a need. I just don't think that I have that emotional need anymore as an adult man who's almost 40.
Yeah. And I kind of missed the boat on Death Cab for Cutie. I don't know. I think I was, so I'm 46. So I'm a little bit old. I think I was like too old when it came out, and I felt, I don't know. I imagined had it come out when I was a teenager, it would have been a different story, or at least younger.
Well, I will expose myself here and say that I was exactly the right age to be in high school when Garden State came out. And I remember distinctly a friend of mine being like, dude, check out this trailer. This movie is going to be amazing. And I was like, oh my God. Fully. I was all in on it, and we watched it and we thought it was amazing. We loved it. And so I listened to that some Postal Service because of that. And then I listened to some Death Cab from that. And I feel like I associate all of this music kind of together for the most part with like things that I, even at the time, I think I had an awareness that was kind of, it felt indulgent in a not a good way to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I would sometimes, if I was feeling really self-pitying, which I often was in high school, I would go to bed listening to this record.
Yeah.
And
I mean, we all something. I mean, it's that age. We all have our thing. We all have it. Like every, you know, I mean, as I often talk about and joke on here, to unpack all of that, I did a 2-year weekly podcast with my friend Sam about the band Rancid because of how formative that shit was for us and how kind of problematic it is in the same time. But, you know,
I have an odd version of this because my older brother is a jazz pianist. So, so he's 7 years older than me. And, you know, we're still really close, but I really looked up to him when I was like 10. Sure. So I was just like listening to Duke Ellington. So I had like a very odd trajectory.
That's awesome.
It was great. Yeah. No, I mean, I think it's a huge part of why my music is what it is. But, and then I, when I got angsty, I got into free jazz. So my equivalent to this is.
That's so cool.
It was a very funny path. So the music I made that would have been really embarrassing in teenage is all lyricless because it was all like out there. It was all like skronky free jazz. That's what that was my emo, whatever. Yeah. So then I had a little bit of a flirtation with the stuff like this afterwards, I think, because I was like, I kind of missed this. I missed this window.
Right. Man, that's teenage free jazz. That's a.
Teenage free jazz. That's my life.
It's going to be the title of your memoir someday.
Yeah, it probably will.
Okay. What is a song that most people hate? I don't know who these people are. Some group of people hate this song. You don't care. You love it.
Yeah. I chose Loggins and Messina, Danny's song, which, you know, it was a big hit. Obviously not everyone hates it, but it's considered to be like a completely schlocky tune. You know, and I think it's considered to be embarrassing by a lot of people, but honestly, I think it's a beautiful song.
I do too. I my whole theory on this is that it's so earnest and earnestness, earnestness scares people. Like people
totally.
And that's something that, I mean, speaking of the Rancid podcast, that was like one of our whole thing is like, yes, it can be too much. If you're like, you know, there is a line, but we need more earnestness. And it freaks people out.
I think it's also like, it's a beautiful song about starting a family, which is so out of step with what people write songs about right now. That I think it's like hilariously, like, if you were to write this song now, I think people would be like, what the fuck? Is this some like trad wife shit?
Right.
But, you know, what's interesting is that I made a 4-track covers record where I covered a bunch of like cheesy 70s songs that I love. Mm-hmm. And I covered this and it's, you know, relatively speaking, by far the most popular song off that covers record. And it's constantly finding its way into people's playlists. I don't know how. Wow. I don't promote this. I don't promote that at all. I don't do anything with it. It's just out there. Yeah. And it's so interesting. Like every week or two, there's another playlist that it pops up on where someone's having a moment with it. Yeah.
Yeah.
It is really interesting. I think people are kind of craving, like, people crave whatever the thing is that can't be expressed. And I think right now, like this, you know, when I tell people, if I tell people I want to have a kid, they'll be like, can I ask you, like, how could you do that? Like, that's the response. So I feel like this kind of wholesome, like, oh, it's beautiful to have a family, which I think it is genuinely, regardless of all the other stuff. I think it speaks to something that people don't have a way of expressing very easily right now.
Yeah, I think that's really true. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think it's, there's just like this full commitment to joy in this song of like, this like genuinely being happy about love and family and domesticity and not in a like, yeah, it's like not in this creepy trad wife way. It's just, it feels like wholesome, but in a real way. I don't know. It's
Well, I think that's the thing with sincerity, I guess, is that it's sort of when it strikes you as real or when it lands, it feels really good. But so many people who are sort of trying to be hyper sincere are not really being honest with themselves.
Yeah.
I would argue. And so it doesn't land. It feels false, and it feels like there's a hidden violence like behind the curtain. Whereas this, I'm sure that whatever inspired the song was not a, you know, all roses, but this moment feels true. Yes. Like this was a moment and it was real and this is how he felt. And it's a beautiful song.
Yeah. I don't know that I've heard your covers. I'm about to, like, after we get off this, I'm going to go look it up.
It's weird. It's not like great. It's very Tascam. It's like tapes, bad vocals, and it's odd. But it has a kind of like lo-fi quality that I think some people gravitate towards. Yeah, everything else I could think of for this song also was just like some shit that no one's ever heard, but they would hate if they heard it.
Right.
And that didn't feel like in the spirit of the question.
Yeah, no, I think this is kind of like a perfect answer because,
nice.
Well, first of all, do you think of yourself as a romantic?
Yeah. So. I mean, more or less. A romantic battered by the world.
Yeah, that's fair. What is the most romantic song?
This is another one where I was just like, this is my first thought because the song has been living with me a lot lately, and it's Big Time by Angel Olsen. And this is another song that's made me cry in a happy way. I just think it is so romantic. It's so loving and so. I think the thing that really gets me about this song, and which relates to my life and my relationship, my love relationship, is that all the stuff about like I had to be losing to get here on time really resonates for me because, man, I was stumbling around for a while.
Yeah.
And feel very lucky to be in the relationship that I'm in and with the person I'm with. And so many accidents and mistakes had to happen for that to be possible.
Yeah.
So when I don't know, when I hear that, it's so beautiful. It's so beautifully expressed.
I know. I relate to that too. Like, I mean, I've been with my partner for 22 years now.
Oh, nice.
And there's something about this song that's like, cause so many romantic songs are about like falling in love and I understand that, but like, this song is always about, is more about like choosing to stay and like, and I don't know. I think there's, in some way, there's like this nice connection to Danny's song where it's like, there's all like this, there's this kind of mundane thing that is like, that's the real romance. Right.
And it is, I love the mundane.
Same. Yeah. And this is also like romance, like with a future tense or something. Cause it's like, and that's so, yeah. And how like all the, you know, the stars have to align and all this. And it's, I mean, you gotta be, it's just, it's, I feel like, you know, when I think about where I am in my relationship and like 22 years in, and it's been hard as fuck. And there's been a lot of, but man, and I'm lucky as hell. Like a lot of things had to happen for us to still be where we are that seem unfathomable.
Yeah. I think that's true for all relationships. Like you really need to get lucky in a lot of ways and you need to, you know, we control so little. Kind of a miracle that we can stay with anyone and love each other.
Right. I went back to therapy a couple months ago, so I'm like very much in like therapy. Thank you. Yeah, it's honestly been, it's been life changing again. And I love my therapist, but I mean, in a creepy way, that sounds terrible, but you know what I mean? He's amazing. But we were talking, you know, I can't remember who it was. It's one of the like, you know, well-known therapy person, maybe Esther Perel. I don't know.
Sure.
So what, but the, like, what is it? You know, most adults have like 3 or 4 great loves in their life. And if they're lucky, it's with the same person. And I think about that a lot, like, cause you know, my wife and I were talking, you know, it's like, we are completely different people than we were 22 years ago.
Of course. And have to be.
Yeah. And yet here we still are like choosing to stay, choosing. And like this song to me,
she really did it, man.
Dude, fucking Angel. I love her, man. She is like, total, like the most badass, incredible songwriter. Like she is
so good,
man. She is best of the best.
It felt good to pick like a somewhat contemporary song for this and really mean it also. I feel like sometimes I'm trying to shoehorn in the contemporary stuff.
Right.
I mean, it's hard for it to live up for the classics, but like, I think this is genuinely one of the best answers to this question. This song is so romantic.
Totally agree. Totally agree.
So shout out to you, Angel.
Yeah. God. Oh, I love Angel Olsen. So what is the song that changed your perspective on an artist, either for better or for worse?
Okay. So I chose Peace Peace by Bill Evans. And this is one of my favorite pieces of music. It's so beautiful. And I think I always loved Bill Evans. It was not that I had any negative thoughts about him. One of my favorite jazz pianists of all time. But the thing about Peace Peace that's so cool to me was hearing him, there's a theme throughout a lot of my listening, which is I love long form stuff. I love repetition. Mm-hmm. And this hearing him play in a situation where he was just repeating a very short refrain. It's like it's the intro to Kind of Blue, basically, that record. And he just improvises over it and he goes really far out in that. I just never heard him play like that.
No.
And I always loved his work and his playing. It's so beautiful, but it's so controlled all the time. And I guess this is too, but yeah, I don't know. Really, I was like, man, it would be so interesting to hear him play like this more. It showed me like so much depth and so many other things that were in his musical mind that I wasn't aware of going in.
Yeah, I think that like you said, like he usually is very controlled. And I think one of the things that's so interesting about this piece is like, he's doing like the Kind of Blue thing with his left hand.
Yeah.
And it almost feels like ritualistic the way it is on the way it just keeps repeating. And then, and that's very controlled. But then like the melodies that they're coming out of his right hand. It's like he's gone to some other plane of existence or something.
Yeah.
And, that combination is, it's incredible.
Yeah. It's so hypnotic and beautiful. Like I wish there was a whole record that sounded like this of his.
Right.
I would be all up in that.
It would be like my favorite record of all time.
Yeah. 100%. It's so beautiful. And it comes up and it comes out of nowhere on a pretty straight ahead record too, which I think is really funny.
Yeah.
Everybody digs Bill Evans, which is like a very classic studio trio record. Sometimes I forget about it and then I'm just like, damn.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I had kind of forgot about this until you sent over your list and I was like, oh my God. Yeah. And I kind of just listened to it on a loop for a little while because it's just, I don't know. It's so, it's like a perfect piece of music.
It really is. And, I don't even know what to say about it besides that. It's just so stunningly beautiful. And I don't know. There were a lot of things I thought of for this. I also thought about like some of the Arthur Russell songwriting stuff because I really didn't understand his work before I heard, like Love Is Overtaking Me, that record. But I also chose so many songwriter things I wanted to pick something else.
Fair enough. I'm assuming lyrics are like important to you. I mean, you're actually somebody who writes lyrics, so
yes.
With that in mind, what are some of your favorite lyrics?
So I chose a song by State Champion, which is Ryan Davis's band before he was Ryan Davis in the Roadhouse Band. The song Death Preferences that I've also listened to about a billion times. And it's just jammed with amazing lyrics.
Yeah.
Honestly, like it's hard to even, I choose the whole song.
Right.
He's an unbelievable lyricist. I think he's my favorite contemporary lyricist. And him and Billy Woods, it's totally across the spectrum.
Right.
Are my two favorite lyricists right now. And, yeah, man. I don't know. He's just an absolute master. The lyrics are both incredibly fun, like language-wise.
Mm-hmm.
Like another enemy smoked in a brotherly scuffle. Like, how fun is that to say? So right. Fun to say. And also like poignant and beautiful, and they're funny. I just, this whole record really, it's just, it came out around the same time as Zion. That's how I found out about it. It's because some of the same writers wrote about both. And I was like, this sounds like interesting and like, a sort of cousin to what I'm doing. And I just totally fell in love with this record, Send Flowers. And I've been following Ryan since then. And I actually tried to get him to sing on male models, and he was interested, but then some shit went down in his life, and he wasn't able to do it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think my fiance's favorite lyric, one of her favorite lyrics of all time is, it's Saturday night, it's Sunday morning, everybody's parking at the bank.
It's so good.
So good.
Man, yeah, he's I'm so glad to like see him like getting his flowers now.
Oh my gosh, it feels amazing.
Like, yeah, it's like one of the sort of music stories of this year. It's like, okay, it's not all bad news.
No, I feel the same way watching him get this press cycle where everything is just popping on this record, and I'm just like, man, couldn't have happened to someone more deserving than Ryan.
Yeah.
He's just been making amazing music for however long, 15 years or something longer.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's sometimes a critical darling, but I feel like this is the first time where everyone I talk to about the record is like, oh yeah, I heard about this.
Right.
Instead of like, oh wow, this is amazing, I can't believe I hadn't heard about it, which is what I feel like I used to get when I talked to people about State Champion.
Right. Yeah. No, I think a friend of mine who's like not, you know, obsessed with music, like, it's like with telling me about it. Like, I mean,
yeah,
it was like,
that's the,
like,
that's oh, the real
have
thing.
You heard this thing? I was like, yes. God, it's yeah. Like, it's happening.
I remember going to see Big Thief play a house show before they blew up. And a friend of mine who is not a music person was with me. And she was just talking my ear off about how great it was afterwards. And I was like, okay, yeah, this is going to happen. And then it sure did.
I love that. It's the best. What song have you or can you listen to the most?
Yeah, I picked Dave Douglas, Charms of the Night Sky. This is a record I found at a used CD store called Stereo Jacks in Cambridge, Massachusetts when I was in high school. Oh, I bought so many CDs there that they offered me a job.
Love that.
Yes, it was a great, I don't know if it's still there actually, I think it might not be, but it was it was an amazing spot. And I found so much great weird jazz there, which is what I was interested in at the time.
Yeah.
And this record I bought basically because of the title, the cover art, which is like a beautiful black and white photo. And it was on Winter and Winter, which I don't know if you ever had any of their CDs, but they had a really interesting manufacturing. Like their CDs had this textured paper or something. So they were like ribbed on the top. And then the art was always like in a small square in the middle of that. It was cool. It was very unique.
Yeah.
So I picked it up partly because of that. And the instrumentation was really unusual. It's like trumpet, accordion, upright bass, and violin. Yeah. And I always am interested in things like that. So I bought it and I completely fell in love with it. And I've gone to sleep to this record 8 million times. And I've just listened to it so much. I know all the solos. I could sing along with the whole friggin' thing. I never get tired of it. It's so mysterious. And probably going to butcher his name, but the accordionist guy, Klishevik.
I have no idea, but
I don't know. Anyway, I don't know how to say his name, but man, his playing on this is so gorgeous. He just, I did not really have any kind of feel for the accordion before this record. And then I was like, wow, this is actually a gorgeous instrument that can do so many cool things.
The lineup on it's great. I mean, yeah, trumpet, violin, accordion, like it's crazy.
Yeah, but it's it worked. Wild.
Yeah. One of the things I love about this record is I feel like this is a great example of, because this like the music is like really complex, but like it's this great example of, because I don't know, a lot of times when I think of like really complex music, you think of like prog or like, which but like music that in a lot of ways to me feels very cold, but this is like, no, it doesn't have to be like, this is very, it's just like this it creates this like very inviting space or something.
It does really create this very warm atmosphere and it's really in touch with mystery. It's like feels so mysterious to me. And, so nocturnal. I mean, this is the Wildermaker record that we started talking about. It's all about the nocturnal energy, the nocturnal feeling. And this record really encapsulates that for me for the most part. Just this like beautiful, yearning, slightly melancholic, but not depressive, just like dreamy feeling.
Yes.
So pretty.
You've got me really curious about these CDs now. I'm going to like, I'm sure
you can find one. I'm sure.
probably cheap on Discogs or something because nobody wants CDs.
Yeah, probably so. But that they were very noticeable. Like it really stuck out.
Yeah, no, that's I'm a sucker for those kind of things. I love weird packaging. So,
Yeah, if you know what Archipelago books are like, that's another very specific thing.
Their
packaging reminds me. They have also this textured cover.
Okay.
With like a weird blank. It's very similar looking. I don't think there's a connection, but
All right. I'm pulling up a window here to look. I'm going to look all these things up when we get off.
Please.
Probably spend money. I shouldn't be. I really don't need to buy books, but hey.
Well, whoever needs to buy books, and yet here we are buying books.
Like one of, in my opinion, greatest used bookstores in the country is 2 hours from here in Fayetteville, Arkansas.
Oh, really?
And we went there a couple weeks ago, like my daughter and my parents and I. My parents had never been there, and it's one of my daughter's favorite places. So we were like, all right, let's go. And my wife was out of town, so she couldn't go. And then we went, and I was pretty good. I only bought like 7 books. And then it was a week and a half later, my daughter's like, well, I'm really sad that mom couldn't go. So we took another trip.
7 more books.
I think between the three of us, we came home with 30. So, but it's like, you know, we spent like $90 or something. And it's like all these, you know, so I need a new bookshelf before I buy more books, but I think can't help
I'm in the same boat. Yeah. I need a new bookshelf, but I never feel bad about buying books. I mean,
no books and like physical media and in general, like, hey, you know,
buying art. Hell yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, so we're doing here.
Yeah. If I ever get sick of that, then like ship me out to I'm done.
For real.
All right. What is the best hype song?
Okay. Deer Hoof, This Magnificent Bird Will Rise. This is a weird choice, but I stick to it. The drumming on this song is so amazing, and it gets me so riled up every single time.
Yeah, my note on here is the song starts and ends with Greg's drumming.
Yeah, like it ends with Greg going absolutely nuts over a very cool, very minimal thing that the band is doing. Yeah, there are a lot of stops and starts, which maybe is not the best for some people for hype music. But this was on my running playlist for a long time. It just
really gets
actually made an entire interval training running playlist out of Deerhoof songs because they have so many tiny, really short songs you could actually do it. I sent it to them because I thought it was funny, and they actually shared it out to all their fans, which was great.
That's pretty awesome.
It. Yeah,
Deerhoof that's really good. One of the best bands of all time.
Yep. So this I understand the stop start nature may not be for everybody, and there's like some cute synthesizer sounds, also maybe not hype for some people. However, the drumming is so energetic and intense and amazing. And I love the trashy in a good way it's recorded. It sounds fucking perfect. This is a song that got me into Deerhoof. So.
Yeah, it's such, the drumming on it's just like, it gets like so dense and intense and it's like he has a personal vendetta against like keeping time or something that he's just it's just, so good.
Well, it almost I haven't like analyzed the song, but it almost sounds like the band is kind of playing in 4 but he's playing in 3 over the top of it, so it's like it all like oscillates against it. It has that feeling that gives me a lot of energy in which things don't quite line up the way you expect them to, which feels so good to me paradoxically.
It is a weird pick, but I'd love it, and I think it's an excuse to talk about Deerhoof because again they're one of the best to ever exist, and
I felt like my playlist was too sedate. I needed something energetic
to kind of knock people out of there.
Yeah, a little bit.
All right, last two questions.
Okay.
What is the song that means the most to you?
So I chose Sandra Perry's In Another Life. There are about 7 million songs I could have chosen for this, obviously. It's an impossible question. These last two both are. But this song really hit me when it came out. And I have very specific associations to it of being in our apartment in Flatbush. Like, it was one of the first days of autumn. And like the first day you can smell autumn in the air, you know, the window was open and I was chopping vegetables, cooking dinner, and I was listening to this song pretty loud, and I was with my partner and our cat, and man, I was just like, this is my life. Like, this is really it. This is, these are the people I'm going to be with, or this is the person I'm going to be with. And like, this is real. This is it. Yeah. It was an incredibly beautiful feeling and also kind of surreal. And I think, yeah, something about the, it was like so wonderful to feel that way. And also sad a little bit at the same time, as it always is, because
right,
whatever your life is, it's not all the other things that it could be. And we live alongside all of those alternate selves that don't really exist or don't get fleshed out. So I think I was feeling both of those things at the same time.
Man.
Like,
yeah, that's really beautiful. And I think, yeah, this, like, just thinking about the song and like thinking about what you're saying, I think that's like really, I think there's like a real connection there. 'Cause like, to me, like he had like this song especially, but like he has this ability to sort of take these sort of small, like intimate moments and make them feel sort of cosmic.
Yeah.
And, it's, yeah, I don't know, this, what a, this is such an incredible song, but
yeah, yeah. The full length version is truly an incredible piece of music. Like,
yeah,
I love all the long instrumental sections and the synth stuff that he's doing on it. And the man, it just, it gives me chills hearing it. It's such a special track, and yeah, I don't think I'll ever get tired of it. It's very emotional for me.
Yeah. All right. What is, at least in this moment in time, maybe it changes. Right now, what is your favorite song?
Radio Cure by Wilco.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is an all-time song for me in many ways. This has been with me in a very important way since I was a teenager. Wilco is the band that made me want to write songs with words instead of play free jazz. And this record, Yankee Hotel Foxtrot, for, as it did for many people, just like exploded my idea of what a song record could sound like. Yeah, it just like laid a path out for me where I was like, oh, I can be really into weird sonic stuff and experimentation and also make songs that are like incredibly moving. And
right,
yeah, there's a place where you can do both of those things in this, in the same record. And that's what I've been trying to do ever since.
Man. Yeah. I mean, this, and this song is like, I mean, it's kind of the perfect example. Like, I don't even, like, when I was listening back to it, and I've heard it a million times, because I'd Yankee Hotel Foxtrot, it's a record that is, I mean, it's what, 25 years old now, at least? And it still sounds
almost
like, if it came out tomorrow, it'd be like, yeah, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. But, it doesn't sound dated at all to me.
And, but yeah, like, the, just listen to the instrumentation and like the actual, on this song, it's fucking weird. It's just like, what so even weird. Is this?
All of the like crackly radio static sounds. Yeah. There's one moment when there's like crackling and then the organ like swells in thinly behind it. And it's like one of the most beautiful things I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know what the hell they were doing. I mean, this is like, in a way, this, I think this record inspired the triple record we were talking about, the Wilder Maker thing, because this is the sound of a bunch of people kind of like holding up in a studio of their own making and going insane. And that's also kind of what the Wilder Maker record is. It's like, I spent too long in a cave with all of this music, and they did a lot of stuff to it that I don't even really remember doing. But I feel like that's the only way you get things like this.
Right.
Like, you have to do so many things wrong to get things that sound like this. I mean, wrong, big scare quotes, obviously. That's so beautiful. There's so many things I love about this, the whole record, but this song in particular. One other thing that's really cool about it is that so the chords move, it's just like a 5-4-1 thing, but they move in a 3-chord cycle, but the melody moves against them, so that the cheer up honey, I hope you can happens over a different chord, like each time it happens. So there's really cool oscillation thing happening that I've only ever heard in one other song, which is a Jason Molina song called North Star Blues, where he does that, a similar thing. Where he sings the A section melody over the B section later in the song, and it also works. Anyway, it's so, it gives it such a like sort of displaced floaty feeling in Radio Cure that is incredible. And God, I also think for me as an TMI teenager with undiagnosed depression, having a lyric, just stating flat out in a lyric, there is something wrong with me, was so soothing in a weird way to me to sing.
Oh, it makes total sense.
Like, it felt like I could acknowledge something that I knew was true in a place that was safe for that, where it wouldn't just be seen as me being dramatic, or, you know, teenagers get their emotions dismissed all the time.
Yeah.
And for me, like in that time, like I didn't know what was happening. I just knew something was wrong. And the song really helped me feel like I was real, or like my experience made sense in some way.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think my kid's going to be a teenager next year. So I think about those, like, instilling it from her the day she could understand, like, your feelings are real and you're feeling like, you know, they're trying to tell you something, whether, you know, they're not always telling you the truth, but they're trying to tell you something.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And,
well said.
Yeah. So, well, this feels like a really nice place to end this.
Yeah.
Bum everybody out. No,
no, the song saved me. It helped me.
Yes.
The song did what it was supposed to do.
Music can save you. Art can save you, people. Come on.
Yeah.
Like,
art is a guarantee of sanity.
Yeah.
Louise Bourgeois. Maybe he said sarcastically, I don't know, but I love it.
Hey, either way.
It's on one of her installations.
So, The Streets Like Beds, Still Warm.
Yeah.
September 19th. Go pre-order it.
Yeah, first...
I don't even know when this is coming out, but... pre-order, order it.
Pre-order or order it. The first 30 people to purchase it on the internet will get a liner cut print of a little piece of the artwork from the back cover.
That's cool.
So, you know, a little treat for those who are early to the party.
Yeah. Oh, that's really cool. I love shit like that. My favorite thing is, like, I love records. Don't get me wrong. But, man, sell me like some weird art print with a download code and you've got like, that's, you know, a book, like a chat book and a download. Anyway. Like a piece of a
line of. Yeah. Code. I was thinking about making a chat book for the lyrics for the whole 3 record thing. When we get
once
there.
You should. Anyway, right, you have at least an audience, a guaranteed audience of one for that. Hey. That's me.
Wonderful.
All right, Gabe, thanks for doing this. This is a lot of fun.
Thanks, Brad. Appreciate you having me.
Once again, thank you to Gabriel Birnbaum of Wildermaker for taking the time out of a very busy schedule, all the many hats he wears, my God, and torturing himself basically to pick songs for this list. He was kept telling me how hard it was, and I was like, yeah, good. listen to his picks to the playlist, link in the show notes. And once again, Wildermaker's new album, first in a trilogy, Streets Like Beds, Still Warm. It is out on September 19th, but you can pre-order it now. It's on Western Vinyl, and it's awesome. And if you're like me, you're going to hear about this, you're going to hear about the concept, and maybe, you know, hear a track or two and be like, oh, I'm excited about this whole thing. So get in early, grab it now. Otherwise, that is all. Please leave a rating, review, wherever you listen to podcasts. Those things help tremendously. If you like it, if you like this podcast even a little more, you can join the Patreon, patreon.com/foxydigitalis, for as little as $3 a month. That ongoing support means everything. Really keeps all this stuff going. Thank you, everybody who's done it. But hey, till next time, keep on listening to whatever the hell you want.